1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. Locally grown radio is 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Getting underway is the retrieval by the Pentagon of an object in Alaska that was shot down today and determining what it is and who it belongs to. WTOP's J.J. Green in Washington, D.C. with more.
An object about the size of a small car was shot out of the sky off the coast of northeastern Alaska this morning. The Pentagon says it was another high-altitude airborne object. It was taken down by an A-9X missile fired from an F-22 Raptor fighter jet from Joint Base Elmendorf, Alaska. The Pentagon said the object was flying at an altitude of about 40,000 feet and was a possible threat to passenger aircraft. The Pentagon also said the purpose of the object was unclear.
FBI agents went to the Indiana home of former Vice President Mike Pence to conduct a search for classified documents. CBS's Stephen Portnoy.
Like the searches the FBI conducted at President Biden's homes in Delaware, the search of Mike Pence's home in Indiana is being done consensually, that is, without a warrant. Attorneys for the former vice president say they discovered classified papers last month in a search they conducted out of an abundance of caution after documents were found at the Biden residence in Wilmington. The FBI came to collect those papers and arranged for agents to do their own search.
Found at Pence's home, one document with classified markings and six additional pages. As the searches for survivors carry on in Turkey and Syria, days after earthquakes and aftershocks, the United Nations warns that hundreds of thousands of people are in urgent need of hot meals, and many are displaced with no shelter from the winter weather. CBS's Remy Innocencio reports aid is slow in coming.
While aid is waiting to get in, Everstream Analytics said that it expects air freight backlogs to get even worse as some airports limit passenger flights. They often carry freight too, but they're giving that to priority to rescue teams. But it warned that road transport will be disrupted for days.
15-year-old boy is killed in a stabbing at a high school in St. Paul, Minnesota. Police have arrested a 16-year-old suspect at Harding High School. Investigators are trying to determine what led up to that stabbing. The CDC says a highly contagious stomach bug is quickly spreading across the country. More from CBS's Bradley Blackburn.
Norovirus is a known problem on cruise ships, but the truth is that it can spread anywhere easily through contact with an infected person, ingesting contaminated food or water, or touching surfaces with the virus and then touching your mouth. Dr. William Schaffner with Vanderbilt University Medical Center says it's a concern.
This is an extraordinarily contagious virus. If someone gets this illness and obviously brings it home, it is very likely that most of the other family members will become infected.
The elderly and the very young are most at risk for the worst cases. Bradley Blackburn, CBS News, New York.
This is CBS News.
Do you know what people see when they Google you? Search engines don't always get it right. And when they're wrong, it's your reputation on the line. So what do you do when you don't agree with your search results? Call Reputation Defender at 800-401-6681. Reputation Defender by Norton is one of the most trusted names in online reputation repair. We have over a decade of experience in fixing people's search results, and we can help you too. Using cutting-edge approaches, Reputation Defender pushes unflattering information down to lower pages of your search results, where few people ever look. We also promote the good stuff so that it rises to the top, letting you put your best foot forward. Your good name is too valuable to leave to the whims of a Google algorithm. You owe it to yourself to take control with Reputation Defender. Visit www.reputationdefender.com or call 800-401-6681 for free advice on your situation. 800-401-6681. That's 800-401-6681.
Florida's governor is just...
Ladies and gentlemen, children at heart and of all ages.
Start your day laughing with Mornings on WFHR.
7 to 10, Monday through Friday, join your host James and the best co-hosts in radio.
Keep up to date on local news, sports, and weather.
Along with Misty's Menu, Birthday and Anniversary Club, and Friday's Culver's Star of the Day.
Join the conversation weekdays 7 to 10 for Mornings on WFHR. We're serious comedy to start your day.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. Following is a list of upcoming meetings in the listening area for Monday, February 13th. In Wood County, the Public Safety Committee will meet at 9 a.m., followed by the Residential Options Committee at 11 a.m. The Wisconsin Rapids Parks and Recreation Committee will meet at 4 p.m. The North Central Community Action Program Incorporated Executive Board of Directors will meet at 6 p.m. The Wisconsin Rapids School District will hold their regular Board of Education meeting at 6 p.m. In Portage County, the Finance Committee will meet at 4 p.m. The Agriculture and Extension Education Committee will meet at 7 p.m. The Stevens Point Board of Public Works will meet at 6 p.m. The Public Policy and General Government meeting will take place at 6:15, and the Finance Committee will meet at 6:25. In Adams County, the Property and Recreation Committee will meet from 2 to 4 p.m., and the Health and Human Services meeting will take place from 5 to 5:30 p.m. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Clear skies overnight with a low of 16. Winds out of the southwest 5 to 10 miles per hour. Sunny skies and calm tomorrow. Highs level off around 42. Clear skies and quiet again tomorrow night. Lows dip down to about 22. Temperatures well above average Sunday and Monday with highs in the upper 30s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 20.
From Lake Wazeecha and beyond, your news, talk, and sports is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
If you're hearing one thing from this whole thing, let it be that you should not drink your beer out of the package that it comes in. The opening in each of these vessels, right, a cup versus a bottle versus a can, those two are very small. Aroma is a huge part of flavor, and if you really want to experience the beer, sometimes maybe you don't. So maybe those beers you can drink out of a can or a bottle.
My mind just went to, it's a lot easier to shotgun a beer than snorkel a bottle.
That is a great point. That's a great
just
point.
Just saying.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Welcome to the noon hour. Thank you for joining us on your lunch hour, no matter where you're joining us, on the radio, the stream, the app, or maybe even a podcast later. Thank you for spending part of your Friday with us. Well, we want to jump right into our next topic to kick off the hour, because this is a concerning, well, it's weird because it feels conflated as far as what this new report from Wisconsin Policy Forum report found, or from Wisconsin Policy Forum found in a new report, that more young adult lives are being lost in Wisconsin, even as death rates go down for older adults. And so to talk a little bit more about this and explain these findings and the ramifications of them is Mark Sommerhauser. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Kristen, thank you so much for having me.
So, this feels, I think, in some ways it feels like a good thing, because you want to think when there's new developments in medical treatment and prevention for heart disease and cancer and some of the illnesses and diseases that cut people's lives short, but in their later years is getting better, but it's pretty concerning to think that people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, their lives are getting cut short. And so I guess to start off, before we get into the details, what was the interest in looking at this as a trend?
Yeah, so I guess I would just say to start, you know, what you kind of laid out in your intro was very similar to the reaction we had, which was like, it's a little hard to know how to feel about this, because there's a couple of pretty big trends happening here, and one of them's really encouraging and one of them's really concerning. So we kind of started this. We had a concept that we might want to do some research relating potentially to drug overdose deaths, but you know, initially we weren't totally sure what that would look like. And as we often do in our research process, we were just kind of batting ideas back and forth, and we decided to kind of actually zoom out a little bit and look at what we call all-cause mortality, which is just you know, essentially all types of deaths for all types of causes lumped together. And when we kind of zoomed out and did that kind of 30,000 foot view, that's when we kind of were able to see in the data some of what became kind of the, you know, the basis for this report, which is that, you know, we're seeing, you know, at the all cause level, you know, significantly lower rates of death for older adults in Wisconsin and nationally. But then unfortunately, you know, when we look at younger adults and we're defining that, there's of course different ways you could define that. We're defining that in the report here as ages 25 to 44. We did see, you know, significant increases in mortality. And I should just specify for your listeners here, we did look at the data kind of over a long-term period, so a two-decade time period from 2001 to 2021. Obviously, you know, COVID-19 has created some of its own trends here just within the last few years that people are going to be aware of. But we kind of wanted to get a big picture view for this report. So we were kind of looking over that two-decade time frame.
And so let's start with the older population as far as the fact that despite, because I think conventional wisdom would have, at least to me, said COVID-19 disproportionately harmed, impacted older generations. And yet,
correct,
even that is true, but not to the not to offset the improvements we've made with the more typical heart disease, cancer. Exactly. And so tell me more about how that, did that surprise you?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I knew we were making progress in some of these areas, but it's always like anything else, it's until you pull up the data and you look at the numbers that it starts to come into focus for you. If you look at all-cause mortality for folks in their 60s, 70s, 80s, both in Wisconsin and nationally, you see a very steady, you know, downward trajectory in total all-cause mortality, starting in 01, going right up through 2019. And then unfortunately, COVID-19 comes along and it does tick up quite significantly. But as you just laid out there, not by enough to offset all of, you know, the declines in mortality that we had seen from essentially from 2001 to 2019. And we really found that there's three kind of main causes for this. And that is that when you look at three of the most common causes of death, particularly for older adults, that being heart disease, cancer, and cerebrovascular illness, which primarily is going to be strokes. Mm-hmm. You know, there have just been over the last two decades, tremendous progress, tremendous declines in mortality from those causes, anywhere from 24% decline for cancer to 45% decline in mortality for cerebrovascular diseases, primarily strokes, over the last two decades. So that's just staggering. I mean, it's incredible. Go ahead.
No, it's, yeah. I mean, I'm just commenting. Yeah. And is, so, I mean, 45% is a huge number.
It's massive. It's massive. And, you know, so, and again, these are three of the most common causes of death. I should say, too, that, you know, we were just, for all of our data analysis here, we were relying on data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They have a publicly accessible database called WONDER that is basically the master database nationally for all 50 states. It uses just data from death certificates that are filed in each of the 50 states, and it enables us to look at trends in mortality, you know, here in Wisconsin, nationally, according to all sorts of demographic and other factors. So it's an incredibly useful tool for this kind of analysis.
We're talking to I was just going to reintroduce you. We're talking to Mark Sommerhauser, who is the communications director and policy researcher for Wisconsin Policy Forum, on his new report, More Young Adult Lives Lost in Wisconsin, Even as Death Rates Down for Older Adults. And so is there anything more you want to add to the trend that we saw with older adults?
I think those are the key points. I mean, it's just the one other thing, I guess, to just kind of piggyback on what you were pointing out there about COVID. You know, obviously then we did see this uptick in 2020 and 21, which were of course the years when we were really seeing the very high levels of COVID mortality. But you know, it just underscores that had we not had a once in a century global pandemic, these declines in mortality among older adults would have been that much greater, which is pretty remarkable. And obviously, you know, we saw COVID mortality down quite a bit in 2022. Hopefully down even further again in 2023. And it does hold out hope that maybe we can kind of get back on that trajectory we were on in 2019 of continuing to make progress in those areas.
But on the contrast, specifically even just starting with COVID, and when you looked at mortality rates for 20s, 30s, 40s, or specifically you guys were looking at 25 to 44, correct?
Yeah, I mean, we looked at all different levels, but where we really saw, where we really did see the biggest change was kind of in that 25 to 44.
And one of that mortality rates are actually going up. And but one of the reasons, even though what was surprising, if I'm understanding this from the report correctly, what was surprising in the assumption that COVID would have increased mortality because we thought, we were told that it's so disproportionately was dangerous for older people, it was also really dangerous for young people. And that's one of a couple reasons that the mortality rates have gone up for young people, right?
Correct. Yeah. And the one thing that probably is important to understand there is that it doesn't take as much to move the needle in all-cause mortality among younger adults because very few of them die. And so, you know, as opposed to older adults, there's much, much higher rates of mortality among older adults. So, you know, you add in something like COVID, which, you know, you're totally correct, did much more, you know, very disproportionately affect in terms of mortality, very disproportionately affected older adults. But, you know, older adults are suffering from much higher rates of mortality for all a whole host of causes. So whereas younger adults, you know, there are a few, you know, more frequent causes of death among younger adults, but just the baseline is so much lower for them that you introduce something like COVID and it will, on a percentage basis, it will move the needle a little bit more. And that's kind of what we saw. You know, that being said, and we'll obviously talk about this in a minute, but COVID definitely was a very much a secondary factor, with the far bigger one being drug overdose deaths.
And so we'll get into a little bit deeper when we come back from the next commercial, but just to set up, what were the other factors that have led to increased mortality rates for younger folks?
Yeah, the main ones are drug overdose and COVID deaths. We did see also a slight uptick in the suicide death rate as well. So that's another contributing factor. But really, you know, the vast majority of this increase really has come from drug overdose deaths. In the last couple years, there was also a little bit of a contributing factor as well from homicide deaths. Of course, we have seen in Wisconsin and nationally, unfortunately, since about the summer of 2020, you know, an uptick in homicide, an uptick in violent crime. That, of course, disproportionately is going to affect younger adults. Most frequently are the victims of homicide. So, again, that was a much smaller contributor. But really, the two main ones are the ones that we kind of highlight, overdose deaths and COVID.
All right. Well, we'll get into that a little bit more as far as how that how Wisconsin differs or is in step with trends nationally, and also what this means as a bigger picture and ramifications of these trends. But our guest this half hour is Mark Sommerhauser, who is a communications director and a policy researcher for Wisconsin Policy Forum. We'll be back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
I'm in the lab all alone, even the postdoc went home. Why won't this DNA come? I'm in the lab to get data. We're up all night to write code. We're up all night to brains glow. For this poster, oh how I hate Illustrator. Why can't I not move this figure? Hope no one scoops my next paper. We're up on that to get data.
A tree can be a warrior, battling global challenges with greater courage. A tree can be a solution, cleaning our air, supporting our communities, and protecting our wildlife. A tree can be noble, growing hope in every corner of the world. That's why now is the time for trees. Millions of trees. Join our planting movement at arborday.org.
When a student lacks basic needs like food, clothing,
clothing, and learning materials, attending school can be a challenge.
And that can make it impossible to thrive.
At Communities in Schools, we address this issue by ensuring that students have everything they need to re-engage in learning,
access to technology and school supplies,
and even emotional support.
By bringing communities of support to students, we're achieving equitable learning conditions.
And that's what Communities in Schools is all about.
Learn more at communitiesinschools.org.
I lived alone and was having problems with my landlord. He's a creep. One night I'm watching TV and I hear my landlord letting himself in. Hey, get out. You can't keep coming in.
I'm just here to fix your fridge and spend some time together.
Get out. I'm reporting you.
Don't make a federal case of it.
A federal case? Sexual harassment in housing is against federal law. If you are harassed, file a complaint with HUD. Go to hud.gov/fairhousing. If you fear for your safety, call 911. Fair Housing. The law is on your side. A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
I'm a wife and the mother of two kids. And when I get to work in the precinct house and put on my uniform, I can tell you, as a police officer, we're building partnerships. This should be happening everywhere, so the police should be reaching out to this community, and this community should reach out to the police. That's the way to make this a safer place.
Start the conversation and help stop crime. To learn the five things you can do, go to ncpc.org/preventviolentcrime. A message from the National Crime Prevention Council and the Bureau of Justice Assistance.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest radio station ever. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM. Oskego to Pewaukee. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
As you know, I'm all about the data, mo data. 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 Here, it's pretty clear.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. I am your host, Kristen Bry. Got Jane Matinere with the another great find of parody songs. And we are talking to Mark Sommerhauser, who is the communications director and a policy researcher for Wisconsin Policy Forum. And we're talking about his newest report, finding that more young adult lives are lost in Wisconsin, even as death rates are going down for older adults. And the previous segment, we talked about some of the reasons why, but I guess how much is this, do we fall in line with national trends, or how much are we either behind or ahead of national trends?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because that's always something that we're trying to be mindful of. There are a lot of trends that we can look at where you can say, oh, you know, X is increasing or decreasing in Wisconsin. But then we kind of look at the national data and we go, okay, this is really just kind of a national trend. And Wisconsin is just sort of riding that larger wave that is playing out throughout the country. To some extent, that is what is happening here. I would say to a large extent it is. We are seeing, you know, the broad strokes of this happening nationally on both sides in terms of mortality declining for older adults, increasing for younger adults. But it is also true that when we look at the trends among young adults, mortality has increased during the period we looked at, which again, you know, was this two decade period from 2001 through 2021, 2021 being the most recent year for which we have data from the CDC. We do see a sharper increase here in Wisconsin in all-cause mortality among younger adults in that 25 to 44 age cohort. So that is, you know, certainly a little bit of additional cause for concern. And in particular, in the area of the drug overdose fatalities, mm-hmm. we see a much sharper increase in overdose fatalities among adults ages 25 to 44 in Wisconsin than nationally. Now, some of that, you always have to keep in mind your baseline. Two decades ago, Wisconsin had a much lower overdose fatality rate for individuals in those age groups than the nation. So we, in a lot of ways, have more kind of regressed to the mean. We've kind of become more like the nation and gotten actually quite close now to the national overdose fatality rate among those age groups. So whereas two decades ago, we were doing much better than nationally in that area, now we've kind of just fallen in line pretty close to where the nation is at. And of course, as most of your listeners are probably familiar, over the last two decades is when we've really just seen the explosion of this opioid overdose crisis play out. And it's really, you know, kind of morphed and evolved from initially being something that was rooted more in prescription medication, right? That people would take for pain, potentially develop addictions and start taking more of this medication and potentially overdose. Now, in the last few years, it's a totally different crisis, and it's become something that's really mostly about fentanyl, which is a synthetic opioid, a manufactured opioid that is incredibly potent, that is unfortunately now more and more often being laced into other drugs. So people will buy some sort of a drug, a street drug, or some sort of a prescription medication that they'll purchase. They'll think that they're buying one type of drug. Unbeknownst to them, it may be laced with fentanyl. And again, this is an incredibly potent drug, especially for people that have not ever consumed it. And it can result in overdoses. And that's unfortunately what we're seeing in increasing numbers nationally and here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, that it feels like that so much comes back to that as far as what is happening, not only just in our metropolitan areas, but across the entire state as far as fentanyl being such a big problem. And so I want to talk about solutions, even if there aren't any, or even solutions that at the forum you guys are interested in researching. But before we get to that, how much do these trends of older people living longer and younger people, the mortality rates going up, are they at numbers where it is exacerbating the already growing problem of an aging population and a dwindling working age population? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a reasonable question to... Yeah, no, I think that's a very reasonable question to ask. I mean, obviously we emphasize in the report, and you understand as well, we all get that, you know, the biggest issue here is the human toll that's being taken, but I don't think the economic toll can be, but I don't think the economic toll can be overlooked either, because as you mentioned, you know, our state is dealing with, you know, an aging population, which is, by the way, a regional issue. It's something that you see in most of the Midwestern states, and Wisconsin is no different in this respect. We're seeing an aging population, you know, people in the baby boomer, especially age cohort, retiring out of the workforce. In a lot of professions, there are just not enough people of working age, especially prime working years, which, you know, is exactly the age group essentially that we're talking about here, 25 to 44. That's, you know, really prime working years in just about any profession. You know, we need more people in that age cohort. And unfortunately, when you have this additional trend now of, you know, primarily overdose deaths, killing more people in those age cohorts, it absolutely is having an impact. We looked at, for instance, you know, within this cohort, just to put some more concrete numbers to it for your listeners, ages 25 to 44, when we compare 2001 to 2021, 1,100 more deaths, a little more than 1,100 more deaths among people ages 25 to 44 in Wisconsin in 2021 compared to 2001. So, you know, and that's just for 1 year, right? So, we've been seeing a steady increase year after year. And unfortunately, we, you know, may see a number in this ballpark in 2022. We don't have that data yet. But, you know, you see a pretty large number like that just for 1 year, and you stack that up year after year. And, you know, certainly over a decade or more, it can absolutely have a really large impact, I think, statewide.
Absolutely.
Well, so
unfortunately, we're not going to be able to get to solutions, but the forum did write a report called Road to Recovery, specifically about Milwaukee County. I will put that in our show notes for today as maybe a glimmer of hope of some way. But Mark Sommerhauser, thank you so much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, right. Thank you, Kristen. It's always good to be with you.
All right, great. We will be back in just a minute with J.R. Radcliffe to talk about the Brett Favre timeline. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
The Shaw 101 from the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival. Your news, talk, and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
My name is Juanita Segura, and I was diagnosed in November of 2014 with non-small cell lung cancer. The first time I heard about biomarker testing was actually my husband. He just started researching about lung cancer.
And I found out about biomarker testing, and I'm like, why not? Let's try it.
I'm Dr. Jorge Gomez, thoracic medical oncologist at the Mount Sinai Hospital. Comprehensive biomarker testing is looking for either substances in the blood or mutations in some of the genes of the cancer cells that can help us identify special types of lung cancer that can be treated with what we call targeted therapies.
Letting my children know brought all of us a sense of hope. To give them hope that mom is gonna be around to see you grow up. And I promised them that.
Ask your doctor about how comprehensive biomarker testing before treatment may help you and your doctor decide on the best treatment for you. Visit noonemissed.org for more.
A public service message from Longevity Foundation.
Let's face it, life looks a little different. During these times, we're doing our best to keep our minds and bodies strong. And getting a flu shot helps us stay healthy. So we don't miss out on what matters, like having game night at home. Yeah, can't do that while sick with the flu. Now imagine family movie night that your daughter can't live without. Well, that's ruined. And don't forget your uncle's socially distanced cookout. See? That's why it's important to be at our strongest. Every year, millions of people in the U.S. get the flu. Especially now, no one has time to miss out on moments that matter. So get your flu shot. Find out more at getmyflushot.org. Brought to you by the AMA, CDC, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Kirsten from Pentatonix. We've all learned how to cope with more time alone. With more time spent isolated or at home, the need for companionship has grown. If you've considered adding a pet to your family, please check with your local shelters and foster organizations. Stray pet numbers have grown immensely over the past several years, and the trauma caused to these animals is devastating. Adopt pets. They need us more than we know. This message is courtesy of the United States Air Force.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. The town of Grand Rapids Police Department identified the vehicle that fled the scene of a crash last week. It happened last Thursday night around 8:45 p.m. at the intersection of 80th Street South and Washington Street. The Grand Rapids Police Department sent out a thank you to everyone who shared their post on Facebook and gave assistance in identifying the truck. The Southwood County YMCA is holding their I Heart Southwood County YMCA Bingo Challenge. Pick up a bingo card at the front desk next week and complete one bingo line for a chance to win a variety of prizes. Fill the entire card for a chance to win a local gift card prize. Cards must be returned to the YMCA by March 22nd. The McMillan Library is holding their tabletop gaming event on Saturday, February 11th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Drop in any time to learn a new game or play an old favorite. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Clear skies overnight with a low of 16. Winds out of the southwest 5 to 10 miles per hour. Sunny skies and calm tomorrow. Highs level off around 42. Clear skies and quiet again tomorrow night. Lows dip down to about 22. Temperatures well above average Sunday and Monday with highs in the upper 30s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 20.
Friday!
It is Friday.
It's just got Friday kind of song.
Did you say that there's over a dozen songs about douches?
You would be amazed.
This was the best one?
It was the most upbeat, I felt.
Well, I think we started off on a good start with our guest who is here to talk about a certain, I'm not going to call him that, but a certain ex-football player who played for the Packers, J.R. Radcliffe, is coming back to the show. He is a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel sports reporter who captures social stories and trending local sports topics. And the timeline of Brett Favre's involvement in a welfare scam in Mississippi certainly falls under that. So welcome back, JR.
Hey, good to be here again. How are you guys?
I'm so glad that you're on the live stream at first, because I was going to give you crap about your Browns jersey that you're wearing.
Yeah. Yes, I'm not a Browns fan or anything, but this is a very special jersey. Mm-hmm. This is Joe Thomas, newly elected, or I should say, elected is probably the wrong word, newly selected for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We found that out on Thursday night. He's going to be inducted into Canton on, I don't remember the date, but it's in August. And yes, Milwaukee's own Pro Football Hall of Famer. Very exciting.
That is exciting. But also, I'm happy that you were on the live stream so I could see your reaction to our intro song. Because I think it took you by the surprise.
Definitely caught me off guard. Did not expect that. Didn't know that there was that much content around. Also a word that I'm not fully comfortable saying out loud, but that... I'm glad we have it in song. That's perfect.
We do have it in song. So let's get started, because Jane actually sent this to me last night, your article that was published yesterday of the timeline of Brett Favre's involvement in this. And she was like, this is dense, but mm-hmm. it feels important. And so luckily, we've had you, the author of this, on the show before. So I was like, I'm just going to see if JR can come on and talk about it rather than me trying to do this justice, because... And you do give credit that this was a lot of reporting that came from Mississippi Today, from Anna exactly. Wolf. But how was it to kind of help, like, put this all together as far as explain this? Because it goes back to 2017.
Yeah, and it's something actually that's published a while ago, and I just keep updating it because there's plenty of new twists and turns, and the most recent coming yesterday when Brett Favre filed his own lawsuit, defamation lawsuit. But yeah, Anna Wolf, an independent organization, Mississippi Today, has done just an unbelievable job covering this, and there are lots of other organizations in there that are kind of synthesized into the timeline. But it was instructive for me, just trying to figure out, okay, like, I understand that there's fraud involved. I know Brett Favre isn't the only player here. And I was just trying to figure out, okay, well, how is he going to go to jail? Is he going to get sued? Is he, where are we with it? Did he just get caught up in something? You know, so I was trying to parse that out myself. And it takes some rereading, even when there's something new. It's like, okay, now what was he getting sued for exactly? Who was exactly doing the suing? And you know, how culpable is he? That sort of thing. So that's what I was looking to do, and started building that thing. And it, you know, like, it resurfaces every few weeks when there's some new development in the whole thing.
And so for now, reading this, what I understand is that he has not been criminally charged with anything. The ex-governor Correct. Has also not been criminally charged with anything. Who has Correct. Been criminally charged?
So there's a couple people. The former head of the Department of Human Services in the state of Mississippi is a guy by the name of John Davis. He was in charge. And to kind of just set it up, this is the particular grant here is called TANF, TANF, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. And it's federal money. It's a block grant that's given to every state. And then the state can decide how they want to disperse it. And Mississippi's decision, or the way they did it, is to distribute it to some nonprofits who theoretically are people who deal with those who are, you know, in need of assistance, and then let them handle it. There wasn't really any communication or documentation between John Davis and a woman by the name of Nancy New, who she and her son were heavily involved in one of these nonprofits. And both of them, by the way, have been arrested. They've had plea deals. Like, they are major players. What Brett Favre's involvement, they're bigger players. You know, they've had money go elsewhere as well. It has nothing to do with Brett Favre. They're in big trouble. But Brett Favre met with them, and both of them actually, in 2017, when he was looking to get funding pulled together for a volleyball facility at Southern Mississippi, his alma mater, where his daughter was playing volleyball. And that's where things really start to go wrong. And what Nancy New did that was as one of the more deceptive things here is that the TANF money cannot be used for brick and mortar operations. You know, they are specifically earmarked for families. So they can't, you can't just build a building with this money. That would be wrong. That would be counter to kind of the goal of the TANF grant. But what they did is they set it up like it was a lease and said, well, we're going to build, you know, we'll give you this money to build this building, Southern Mississippi, but we're going to treat it as a lease operation, not a here's money for construction so that, you know, we can use the building for needy families and have it, you know, be multi-purpose, multi-use. That's not really what happened with the building. The building was built for volleyball. Yeah. And so that was the biggest expenditure, the $5 million sent to Southern Mississippi ostensibly as a lease, but was actually for this building. That was one of the bigger chunks of money that was improperly used. But that's $5 million, not a $77 million. Like this, there's a much broader, you know, fraud scheme here. The thing is, Brett Favre was kind of at the forefront of fundraising for that building and trying to get, trying to kind of work his connections to get some money. And there's more than just that building. There's a, you know, biomedical startup too that gets in here as well. But basically, he was kind of nudging his buddies over and over and over for money, and they were willing to give it to him. And that ended up being, you know, being fraudulent, including some money that Favre has paid back, some things he's still getting sued for. But that was kind of the starting point back in 2017 where things started going wrong.
So then with the, because he hasn't been criminally charged, but there are lawsuits. So like, what are some of the lawsuits that he is on the hook? I mean, I don't know, the lawsuits aren't settled, but as far as what legally has been proven so far as his involvement, even if it's in lawsuits, not criminal charges.
Yeah. Like you said, criminally, he's not right now on the hook, and neither is former Governor Bryant, who was kind of his kind of main contact there for a while. He's no longer governor of Mississippi. He did two terms, and that was all that you can do in Mississippi. So he just was replaced by another governor. And the state tried to recoup, first of all, $1.1 million that was paid to Favre for appearances, and he was going to record some, you know, some like health service, public service announcements on the radio, make some speaking appearances. Those never happened. So there were a couple payments made to him worth $1.1 million. Initially, the state sued him to get that money back because they figured out that he didn't make those appearances. He didn't, you know, he kind of denied wrongdoing there. He did repay that money eventually. But now there's sort of, and there have been some amendments to this lawsuit as well. And there's a million different people that they're suing, including, you know, Favre, but then also like Favre Enterprises, and then his buddies with this startup group, and the school has gotten brought into this as well. But, you know, basically now it's sort of damages. Their position is that Brett Favre knew what he was doing, that he was pulling money, you know, requesting that money be pulled anyway from this fund that was earmarked for something else. And that, you know, that there was some wrongdoing there. You know, Favre's position is that there was no wrongdoing. He had no idea that that's where the money was coming from. He was consulting with old friends, but he had no idea that government money meant for something else was ever going to be used for his projects, which not everyone buys into that.
Yeah.
That is his position right now. And now I think we kind of, there's still a lot that could be developed. Like the Department of Justice could decide, yeah, actually, not only did that happen, but we actually can come up with some criminal charges for you. But that has not happened yet. And honestly, I'm not even sure if it will.
So then the update from yesterday, we're talking to J.R. Radcliffe, who is a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel sports reporter and captures social stories and trending local sports topics. And as of yesterday, he updated his timeline, or the timeline, of former Packer Brett Favre's involvement in this welfare scandal in Mississippi, that now he is the one filing lawsuits.
Yeah.
And so tell us more about these defamation lawsuits and if they have any legs.
He is coming after Shannon Sharp, who is, of course, the brother of former Packers receiver and Favre's teammate Sterling Sharp. He's on Undisputed every day with Skip Bayless and the Fox networks there. And he's coming after Pat McAfee, whom we know if for no other reason, because he hangs out with Aaron Rodgers on Tuesdays.
Aaron Rodgers, and the only guy who can get Aaron Rodgers to really bare his soul.
Open up. Yeah. Oh, man. The content. Oh, the content is so much. There's so much.
We could talk about his 4 days in darkness if we have time.
Both of those gentlemen are now in the crosshairs of a defamation lawsuit. They both, to some, you know, to paraphrase, both of them said to some degree that Favre stole money from poor people. Like, that was kind of how they framed it. And it wasn't, you know, I'm not a lawyer well enough to know like what the threshold is. Favre is a public figure, so it's a lot harder to prove, you know, sort of defamation, libel, anything like that. I don't know if you could specifically say Shannon Sharp and Pat McAfee saying it cost him anything or what the deal is there. He didn't steal money directly from poor people. Like, that's not what happened. But ultimately, you know, you've got a lot of people coming down saying that he should have known better. He should have known that that money was coming from somewhere and probably people who need it more than he does. So that's sort of the ethical, moral versus legal thing. The bigger interest to me was that he also filed suit against Shad White, who is the auditor for the state of Mississippi. And he's the guy basically in charge with finding all the figures and money and then turning it over to the Department of Justice to say, okay, do with it what you want. Initially, he said Favre was fine, that he behaved and did everything they asked him to do. In later interviews, not so much. He's sort of implying that there is some pretty moral grayness there that Brett Favre probably should have known better. So that's really interesting, all of it. And obviously, McAfee and Sharp are pretty big names. So I'm sure that there'll be a lot of people following this.
Has Favre been having money problems that we're unaware of or something? It just doesn't sound like very much money, $5 million to build a volleyball center. Why don't you pay for it yourself and put your name on it? What is with rich people? Jeez.
I completely, completely agree. That is one of the takeaways here. Why? Presumably, Brett Favre has a lot of money. And if you ask him to pay $5 million for a volleyball facility, you know, can he just go to the bank? I think what we've seen is the answer is no. Whether he could, we don't know. Whether he decided that he had a way to pay for it without pulling it out of his own pockets, or he legitimately doesn't have that money in his pockets. Like, that's something you have to consider. He was very persistent with his friends in the government in high places. He even came to them after there was some of the scandal had been revealed. Like, people were already getting, you know, in legal trouble, and he was still asking for more money, like, to finish off his volleyball facility. It was wild. So I think we have to assume either he doesn't have the money, or he just felt like he could pay for it through other means. And it was very important to him. He committed to it, found out maybe couldn't do it or wanted to do it another way. And then, you know, things start snowballing from there.
Well, and it's interesting to go back a little bit you are a journalist. I do opinion. So we are in different sides of the aisle. But I think going back to what's happening with the defamation suit of what is the line in, because I feel like these commentators in sports, whether it's Skip Bayless, like they're kind of always stepping in it, but that's also kind of their job because they're literally, it's not just reporting like what you do. It is adding color, adding opinion. And like, I think as we talked about it, I would have to go back and listen to the show of when you work an opinion, how much you can give your opinion about something that hasn't been legally found yet. And also the ramifications of it. I mostly also think of it, and this is a little bit of a sidestep, but as of this morning, I was just seeing that, different commentators who've referred to Russell Westbrook as like a vampire, and his wife saying, you know, his wife posting this and being like, ESPN, this is sick. Like, my kids go to school and they have to talk to their kids about their dad, whether or not their dad's an actual vampire. And so do you feel, I mean, which is a little silly, but the kids are small, but you know, like, is there a responsibility on the side of commentators and opinion, even though there's a lot of time to fill? Like, regardless of legality, is there a point here that they shouldn't have been making those claims if there's no legal charges yet?
I mean, that's a great question. I think all of media doesn't have a great answer for that. It's challenging because it is a really nuanced situation. It's not obvious what's happening here. I mean, it seems pretty clear, I think, to a lot of people, but I'm guessing, you know, Pat McAfee, Shannon Sharp, and whomever have talked about it without having all the details, you know, and someone who's put together a big timeline. I don't have all the details. You know, I'm not there in Mississippi doing this reporting, which is very nuanced and has a lot of moving parts and things like that. So, Brett Favre's camp has denied all wrongdoing, are all wrongdoing. Like, he really feels like he did nothing wrong. So I guess he's a little burned by that.
All right. Well, JR will still be here when we come back, but we're going to switch gears to a different sport, different team, because Jay Crowder is coming home. So we're going to talk about that and maybe a little bit about TikToks. Hello? This is As Goes Wisconsin.
What's your favorite thing about a good movie? What makes the perfect song? And what's it about the first lines of a book that will snatch our attention? If these questions intrigued your artsy interest, you don't want to miss Director's Cut on WFHR every Sunday night from 8 to 9. Your WFHR program director, James, and head of production, Seth, will be diving into the local arts and entertainment, hot topic movies, hidden gems, and more. Audience feedback and requests are encouraged for this fun and open conversation about art in all its forms. It's artist supporting artists in their own words.
We may be thousands of miles apart, but we can still connect. And when we do, we make things better. At Child Fund, we connect children all around the world with what they need to grow up healthy, educated, and safe. Together, we co-create connections that help millions of children who live in poverty worldwide, and their families, and their communities, and you. Join us. Together, we can make the world a better place. Two small worlds at a time. Visit childfund.org to learn more.
One in four Americans today are living with a disability. I'm one of them. People with disabilities are extremely talented, resilient problem solvers that have so much to offer. And we've got a trusted ally on our side, an organization we can rely on, Easter Seals. Easter Seals is leading the way to full equity, inclusion, and access to healthcare, employment, and education for people with disabilities, families, and communities. That's my Easter Seals. Make it yours.
Learn more and get involved at EasterSeals.com.
How is your drive to school?
Let me tell you, I had to get my iced coffee first. I just can't seem to put it down. My favorite rapper just announced a tour. My phone was buzzing like crazy. I'm so excited. I had to text all my friends right then to talk about it. Then someone started calling me and...
Let's try that again.
I turned my phone off right away. I never drive distracted.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
News, talk, and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM. FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
Milwaukee, you're my one horse town.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Pry. We got Jane Matinair on the board, and we are talking to J.R. Radcliffe, who is a reporter at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and captures social stories and trending local sports topics. And moving on from Brett Favre, we have some exciting news about a certain Crowder, not to be confused with Trey Crowder, who is a Tennessee, like, redneck liberal comedian, but Jay Crowder, Marquette alum. We went head-to-head with him on the Phoenix Suns when we played them in the finals, and he was very good. I remember that series being like, I wish he wasn't so good. But now he's going to be a Buck, which is very exciting, right? This is good news.
Yeah, he was even better when the Miami Heat eliminated the Bucks from the playoffs the year before that. He played with Miami, so the Bucks are probably sick of seeing him. Now they're getting him. It's one of those transactions that, and I think this is actually kind of rare, where you've heard his name associated with the Bucks for months. Mm-hmm. He's been sitting out all season. He's been unhappy with his situation in Phoenix, and he'd been asking for a trade. And the Bucks were kind of a team that where he'd fit pretty nicely. They kind of need that sort of defender, sort of a 6'8" type defender who can do some of the things that he can do, and it just seemed like a natural match forever. But it took up until the final hours before the trade deadline before it actually happened, and he was actually traded from the Suns to the Nets and the Kevin Durant deal first. And it's not entirely clear when he'll be available, because he's been sitting out since last postseason. He hasn't been in any NBA game since then, so I assume there's going to be a little bit of an acclimation process. But like I said, fits what they need. He's kind of a missing piece, and of course Bucks fans remember them adding PJ Tucker for the 2021 home stretch and how valuable he was in the playoffs. And I think they're hoping to catch that lightning in a bottle once again.
And so, explain a little bit further, because it's not that he's hurt, but why has he not been playing? Is just because of a personality clash, or is it just because? And I would hope that even in those situations he's still practicing, so it's not that he's totally cold, but like, What is the situation there that he just wouldn't have been playing despite being a good player?
Yeah, and not practicing. I'm sure he's working out. I'm sure he's keeping healthy and stuff. But that it's not 100% clear. Which is maybe if there is a small caution for Bucks fans, is kind of trying to unpack that a little bit. Lori Nichol did a great story at jsonline.com trying to sort of break that down. And you know, he said it's not about money, that he felt like it wasn't about his starting job, which kind of had disappeared in Phoenix. But there's definitely some animosity there with him and the coach. The coach is kind of like, I just got to move on. Monty Williams, who's by all other accounts is a really easy guy to get to work with. He's a pretty laid back, chill personality, and he just wasn't happy. And it's Phoenix is a good team. I mean, they could certainly, especially with Durant now, they're going to be one of the contenders for the championship once again, the Western Conference. So it's not like, and I mean, Jay Crowder's not a star. He's a role player. And so it is curious, right? Like why would a role player not want to play with the Phoenix Suns? He was probably getting paid roughly what he's worth. His role was probably roughly what it should have been. He just didn't like it there. And he has bounced around a lot. He's played, I think, for eight teams, 10 plus years. So, I mean, is he a malcontent? I think is the concern Bucks fans would have. Like, is he gonna not want to play here? What's his role here? The Bucks did get to meet with Crowder before they made this trade. That he was given permission to sort of talk things over. Presumably, that all got hashed out. That okay, the Bucks are telling him exactly what his role is going to be, and he was happy by that. And you look at his tweets. He's clearly very happy to be coming to Milwaukee. So something there was ironed out in advance, and that does, I think, lend a little bit of calm to sort of the unpredictability of it,
of the personalities. Mm-hmm. Is there any concern or love lost as far as who we traded him for between Wara, Hill, or Ibaka?
I mean, I'd feel really bad for George Hill if he got traded away from a second championship Bucks team. That would be the second time that the Bucks have won a title and George Hill was traded during the season. So I feel bad for him, but ultimately they gave nothing that they were going to use in the playoffs, to make it sort of a crude way of looking at it. But, Jordan Wara, interesting, but wasn't really developing into anything more than just kind of a guy off the bench. George Hill, a veteran, he was having a really nice year, but he's still not somebody that you would have seen getting major rotation minutes in the postseason. Serge Ibaka was already unhappy with his role with the Bucks, had left the team. Everybody was kind of cool with that, but they were saying they will find a new spot for him, a new team. So no loss in terms of player rotation. They gave up 5 second round picks, which is a lot. Mm-hmm. But if you go back over the past decade and look at the best players in the NBA to come from the second round, you do have Nikola Jokic, who is a 2-time MVP, could be third this year. That was back in 2014. I mean, that was a great hit. But those picks are like lottery tickets. The odds of that happening are so remote. As far as I know, Jokic, since 2014, again, there have been no All-Stars drafted in the second round of the NBA draft. It's not like the NFL draft or the Major League Baseball draft, for that matter, where second-round guys are still possibly franchise-changing players. That's definitely not what happens in the NBA. So it's not really – it's a high volume of things to give up. 8 things total, but it ultimately I don't think is anything that's going to hurt them.
And then finally, totally different subject, but not sometimes. Right. I also, my other job is at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. JR and I work together, but one of the new things that we're doing at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is some of the reporters who do the daily briefing newsletter are now also on TikTok. And JRs are very good. So how are you liking making TikToks, JR?
I'm enjoying them quite a bit. I'm definitely a person who loves my phone, but I have not been on TikTok. And it's, I don't want to say I'm too old for it, but I'm probably, I'm not in the demo. So, it's taken a little bit of getting used to it, getting to know how to be good on TikTok, how to be funny on TikTok. I think with a lot of work, I maybe could get there, but I'm not going to say that I've integrated it into my life, but it's a little bit of a new frontier for me. And we're having a lot of fun. My colleagues, Bill Glauber and Sophie Carson as well, are doing a lot of great stuff. We do the newsletters five days a week, and then we do a 60-second TikTok that sort of summarizes what you see in the newsletter. And it's fun. It gives us a chance to show off our office a little bit and show off our personality a little bit. It's been really cool.
They've been great. So first I would say, if you're subscribed to the Daily Briefing, as far as that is one of my like 4 things that I read in my preparation for this show and is a great summation of the news of the day for Southeastern Wisconsin, but also Wisconsin as a whole. And so certainly get that. It pops in your inbox. I think it's 7 a.m., 7:10 between 7 a.m. and 7:10 every day, because it's even on the weekends. And so certainly subscribe to that. But also check out the social medias of Journal Sentinel for the quick hits and JR's. I remember saying that I was like, JR would be really good at this after we had interviewed you and you'd come on this show multiple times. And and lo and behold, you are.
It's fun. I'm glad we get to do it. And those newsletters are really fun too. We can kind of experiment a little bit with our voice and stuff and get people the news with their coffee and give them the greatest hits before they start their day.
Absolutely. All right. Well, J.R. Radcliffe, check him out on Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for his social stories and trending sports topics. Thank you for joining us today. Kind of last minute, but we will have you back soon.
All right. Sounds good. We'll see you then.
All right. Have a great weekend. Well, that'll do it for the noon hour. When we come back, some more debates on etiquette for the 21st century. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Chris Domine is a husband and a father. Chris is an athlete. Chris is even an Iron Man. But 10 years ago, Chris was facing a very different story because his kidneys were failing.
Basically, the doctor said, if you don't get a kidney transplant and if you don't do dialysis, you are going to die.
Fortunately, Chris received a second chance at life, made possible by an organ donor.
You know, your well-being changes from loss of hope to better times ahead.
More than 100 million people in America are registered organ, eye, and tissue donors. People of every age and ethnicity, because they believe it's the right thing to do. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life. Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.